Friends, expect it. If you're going to stand for truth, if you're going to live for God, there will be opposition.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown. The number to call, 866-348-7884. Bottom line, very simple. In this world, we will have opposition. In this world, we will have trouble. In this world, we will have difficulty. And if you are determined to stand for what's right, if you're determined to speak the truth, if you're determined to live for God, you will have opposition. You will find yourself swimming against the tide. You will find yourself going against the grain. You will find yourself often feeling lonely and isolated in the natural. But in God's sight, you will be backed by Him. Expect opposition. 866-348-7884. That's the number to call. Now, I'm going to open the phone lines. If you have Bible questions, theology issues you want to talk to me about, I will try to take some calls as well over the course of the show. But I especially want to encourage you to do what's right. I especially want to encourage you to stand. I especially want to encourage you to fear and reverence God more than you fear people. You know, Jesus said in Matthew 10:28, to paraphrase, don't worry about people. The worst thing to do is kill you. Yeah, that's basically a paraphrase. What did he say literally? Don't fear those who kill the body, but can't kill the soul. Rather, fear him who, after he has killed the body, can destroy the soul in hell. So when we rightly reverence God, when we rightly recognize who he is, when we rightly understand the eternal implications of how we live and what we do, when we rightly apprehend those things, we're not going to be intimidated by people. Leonard Ravenhill used to say, the man who's intimate with God will never be intimidated by man. If I have a proper view of who God is, if I have a proper view of my relationship to him, if I have a proper understanding of what really matters, then the only question is, Father, what's your will? The only question is, how can I please you? The only question is, what do you want me to do? Not what are the consequences or what will people think? 866-348-7884. I want to give you an example of something. And I mentioned this in my latest article, when Christian conservatives are compared to the 9/11 terrorists. We have been drawing attention to what is happening in the world around us. We have been drawing attention to the outrageous legislation that is being pushed in California. And I mentioned in this article that one gay activist who periodically will write articles attacking me, one gay activist said this: Brown is a religious zealot, a Christian convert, who is, notice these words, barely distinguishable from the folks who flew airplanes into buildings for their God. Unlike them, Brown is nonviolent. However, like those 9/11 maniacs, Brown substitutes literalist religious belief for logic, science, and common sense. Brown, I think, relishes the negative attention, and while I say that he is nonviolent, he does equivalent violence to LGBT people every day through misinformation. Notice the words again. That he is, speaking of me, barely distinguishable from the folks who flew airplanes into buildings for their God. So let's put this in context. California is pushing a bill that passed the state assembly overwhelmingly, easily, making it illegal for anyone of any age to get help with unwanted same-sex attraction. to make it illegal for anyone of any age to get help with gender identity confusion. Meaning, here is a 20-year-old girl, young woman, and she feels like she's a man trapped in a woman's body. She's tormented by it. She wants to meet with a professional counselor or go for pastoral counseling where there's some financial transaction of some kind. She wants professional help. No, illegal. Oh, it's fine to affirm that you're a man in a woman's body. It's fine to get counseling to learn how to transition. It's fine to get hormone therapy. It's fine to get sex change surgery. It's fine to mutilate or change perfectly healthy parts of your body to make you into something that God did not intend you to be. That's perfectly fine and legal. But to say, I want to sit and talk with someone, I want to sit and talk and get help, illegal. Here you are, a 30-year-old man. And this is why I've dubbed it the must stay gay bill. Okay. Here you are, 30-year-old man. Maybe you suffered repeated abuse from an uncle or another male relative or a neighbor, say from the ages of 7 to 10. You were repeatedly raped. You then realize that you were very uncertain about your masculinity and very uncertain about your own attractions. As you began to develop and get into puberty, you saw to your shock that you were attracted to the same sex. You weren't attracted to the opposite sex. And you struggled with this, and you haven't known how to come to terms with it. It violates your religious beliefs. It violates your own desire to be married to a woman and to have a family together. So you're 30 years old. You would like to go for counseling, for therapy. Illegal. Okay, it is utterly and completely outrageous. It is totally over the top. It is a violation of common sense. It is a violation of our freedom of religion, of our freedom of self-determination. It is an outrageous attack on religious liberties. People have pointed out, legal scholars have pointed out how this could lead to the banning of religious books, because to sell a book that's advocating this would be illegal. It's extraordinary. And yet to oppose this, I'm not telling this gay activist how to live his life. That's ultimately between him and God. No, I don't recognize if he's, quote, married. I don't recognize the legitimacy of that in God's sight. But plenty of people don't recognize the legitimacy of many things. That's, hey, you can do what you want. I can recognize it or not, whatever. But he's free to live his life. I'm not telling him you have to change. You have to try to change. Whatever. He says, well, I reject your views of the Bible. That's fine. That's between you and God. I grieve over that, but that's between you and God. But all I'm saying is give someone else the right to get help if they want it. No, illegal. Give someone else the right to follow the dictates of their conscience according to their religious beliefs. No, illegal. For calling that out, I am told that there is very little to distinguish me from 9/11 terrorists who flew planes into buildings and killed innocent, thousands of innocent individuals. That's the cultural madness we're dealing with, friends. And we must expect that this is what will happen when we stand up for truth. You say, well, how did it get so far? How did things get to this point now in our society? Very, very simple. The church has been silent far too long. The church has failed to speak up. When we've had liberty, we failed to use it. When we've had open doors, we failed to use them. We failed to get involved. I'm not talking about all of us becoming political activists. I'm not a political activist. If I'm an activist, which I am, it's a biblical activist. It's living out my faith and calling on others to do the same. And when that means going against the grain of the society, then I do it. All right, but I'm not saying every pastor should preach politics every Sunday or give a commentary on what's happening in the White House. No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying that every week our focus is on social issues. I'm saying we live in this world. And in this world, we are called to be disciples and shine like light and have the function of salt. And part of that function is to be a moral preservative, to be a conscience in the society. And yet we're all too concerned about what people say. Jesus said in John 16:33, in this world, you will have tribulation. but be of good cheer. I've overcome the world. Paul said in Acts 14:22, we must go through many obstacles, many difficulties in order to enter the kingdom of God. Jesus said in Matthew 5:10, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. If we stand up for what is right, if we follow in the footsteps of Jesus, we will be persecuted, we will be rejected. And right now, nobody's trying to chop our heads off here in America. Nobody is literally throwing us in prison and torturing us. No one is burning us alive at the stake. So a lot of our brothers and sisters around the world suffer far more, far, far more for their faith than we do here. What's remarkable is they suffer so much for their faith and don't back down. We suffer so little and back down. That's what's remarkable. That's what's so grievous. So friends, as I wrote the other day, when it comes to free speech, use it or lose it. Use the liberty you have, the liberty we have, or we're going to lose the liberty we have. Paul said in 2 Timothy 3:12, all those who live godly lives in Messiah Jesus will suffer persecution. Are we in a worldly hostile world? Yes. Are we in a world that is rejecting day by day more and more, I'm talking about America, more and more biblical values and biblical morality? Yes. Why then should we think that we can just have a nice life, go to church, have a nice family, have a nice job, enjoy sports with our kids, enjoy wholesome entertainment, have a nice home, and all that? Why do we think that we will be without conflict in this world? What makes us better than Jesus? What makes us better than Paul and Peter and the other apostles? What makes us better than our brothers and sisters persecuted all around the world today? So friends, time to wake up to reality. Time to determine, I'm going to stand up and do what's right. Be it getting involved in your local school board, be it speaking up on social media, be it sharing one of my articles or videos, be it speaking boldly from the pulpit, be it running for political office, be it taking a stand in your university. Wherever we are, whatever sphere of influence we have, it's time for us to stand and do what's right. There will be opposition. Expect it and stand on it as a platform to proclaim your message all the more clearly. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll be back. I'm going to take some calls on different subjects and continue to encourage your heart to stand today.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Let me just alert you to a show we have planned for Monday with my friend Dr. Joe Matera. He has been around with the forming of what was known as the NAR, New Apostolic Reformation. He leads today the U.S. Council of Apostolic Leaders. I'm a member of that. It's hundreds of leaders from around America. And he has very clearly made statements distancing himself and the organization from some of the tenets of NAR. You say, but he is NAR. No, that's the terminological thing that I keep trying to help people understand. That there's a difference between those of us who believe in fivefold ministry today, apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers, those of us who believe in that today, and what is often called NAR. It is the sloppy use of the term that has concerned me. It is the hysteria associated with some of the fringe abuses that have concerned me. And with that, I used the wrong verb there. The hysteria, I should have said has. All right. So the hysteria associated with some of the abuses that has concerned me, just trying to be grammatically correct. I don't want to frustrate any English teachers who are listening. But because of some of the hysteria, I heard clips from a video, NAR now is controlling the lives of over 350 million people worldwide. It's nonsense. It's nonsense. However, there is something specifically, historically, in the last 20, 30 years, whatever it was, designated as NAR, okay? And I agreed with some parts of it, but had strong issue with other parts. And I really believe, as much as I've been trying to address this, and I'm absolutely ready to move on, okay? It's come up enough, and I'm moving on. And to whatever extent my book, Playing with Holy Fire, intersects with addressing some of those abuses, then awesome, wonderful. And by the way, I'm very happy to talk about abuses in the term apostle. I talk about it in Playing with Holy Fire. Absolutely. I have a whole chapter on abusive leadership. I have a chapter on superstar leaders. So by all means, without hesitation, I am addressing issues and abuses. And where I see some things where I differ, if it's a friend of mine, someone I have some access to on some level, even if we're not close, maybe we've ministered in certain circles for years so we know each other, I reach out to them privately. Why did you ever say something publicly? Because I reached out privately and we addressed it privately and things were discussed privately. All right? But that being said, as much as I've tried to address things with some level of precision, some of you said, I still don't get it. I still don't follow what you're saying. I think the show on Monday will be very helpful. So just make a note of that in case you miss it. You can watch it later, listen to it later on our archives. All right, tell you what, in the midst of today's show, I'm going to take some questions, even if they are unrelated to the larger content. And then I want to keep coming back to encourage you to stand and do what's right. Keep coming back to the focus subject today, expect opposition. Moms, dads, don't you know as you're raising your kids, as your child is old enough to say no, when you try to get your child to do the right thing, there's some opposition. Why? Because your child is beautiful and special, as wonderful as that kid may be, that child is still a fallen human being, right? You know, foolishness, Proverbs tells us, is bound up in the heart of a child. And it's the rod of discipline that drives it out. So we know and understand that kids rebel. It doesn't mean you have to have terrible twos. It doesn't mean your teens have to rebel. It means that when you stand for it, there's always going to be some level of pushback. Mom, Dad, there's always going to be some level of pushback. We're the same. Someone sits us down and says, you're going to have to change your diet. You're going to have to change your lifestyle. You need to be more disciplined in that area. And we make excuses or we feel bad. Well, that's just one kind of opposition. When we now shine light in dark places, the darkness doesn't like that. It's like someone waking you up in the middle of the night saying, come on, you got to get up. You got to get up. We got to get dressed and get to the airport for an early flight. I don't like that. That feels like an assault. That's what happens when light shines in darkness. That's what happens when we tell people they need Jesus. Why do I need Jesus? Well, you're a sinner in God's sight and you're under his judgment, but he died to save you. Well, the first part of that message is not good news. The whole message is wonderful news. It's amazing news. But the first part of that message is not good news. Nothing I want to hear. Sinner under God's judgment. But that's the truth of the gospel. And that's part of our message. To preach the love of God without the holiness of God is only part of the message. To preach forgiveness through the cross without talking about human guilt is only to preach part of the message. Because of which we have a lot of defective or counterfeit converts. They've heard part of the message and responded to part of the message. Who doesn't want to be loved? Who doesn't want to get rid of guilt and shame? But we've bypassed the sin part. When we talk about the sin part, people won't thank us. Some will, but others will curse us. Expect it. That's reality. That why should we be any different from every other generation in church history and from believers, brothers and sisters all around the world? 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to the phones in Raleigh, North Carolina. Jay, you're on the line of fire.
Hello. Hi, Dr. Brown. Man, you're a rock, you know.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'll tell you. Yes, my question was, if I confess, you know, I've confessed my sin to the Lord, of course, and I spoke to my pastor about it, I don't have to tell anyone else about it, right? My wife or anybody like that?
Well, it all depends, sir, on the nature of the sin and the depth of your relationship with your wife. For example, if God forbid you had sinned against your wife, right? So I'm not going to use you. I'll use someone else, okay? If if Joe had committed adultery and now he repents before God and he goes and tells the pastor, I committed adultery. The pastor says, hey, I appreciate you being straightforward with me, and let's get involved in your life to see why this happened and to help you not to do this again. By all means, you've got to tell your wife. You've sinned against your wife. You've broken covenant, or Joe has broken covenant with his wife, by all means. So there may be certain things that it's more appropriate to tell someone else, you know, that fell short here or had an issue here. If you've sinned against a person, you go to that person to make things right. But in the case of adultery, say, by committing adultery, Joe has sinned against his wife and therefore needs to confess that to his wife. And in doing so, as painful as it would be, it would help prevent it from happening again and also bring deeper healing to the marriage, because there's obviously something wrong in a case like that. So I'd look at it like this. If I am trying to find a way around confessing my sin to the person that most needs to hear it from me, then I'm still avoiding the real issue. I haven't fully repented, because the fully repentant person wants to come clean and get things right.
Oh, okay. So it's not just I'm ultimately forgiven by God. That's fine, huh? You know.
Yeah. Look at it like this. Joe steals $1,000 from his boss. All right. But nobody knows it. His boss doesn't even know who did it. And he says, God, I'm so sorry. I stole that money. Please forgive me. Well, God forgives him, but he still has to bring that money back. He still has to tell the boss what happened. So when we sin against people, we need to make things right with people. And always we go to God first and foremost, because all sin is sin against God. But yeah, the idea, sir. I just don't have to tell. I know one guy who was going for counseling. And what had happened was he had committed adultery, and he was afraid to tell his wife, and he had broken the thing off, and he was trying to do the right thing, and he went to see a pastoral counselor, and the first question the pastoral counselor was about to ask him, it ended up he came clean with his wife, but he told the counselor, I was going to come to you first, and the counselor said, my first question would have been, so when do you plan to tell your wife? And you know, so again, that's the relationship we have out of the people in this world. There's only one in that deepest sense where the two become one, a husband and wife. And in that sense, that relationship is unique and even different than the relationship of a parent with a child. So we take that with the utmost seriousness. And then everyone has to decide how far things go. For example, am I going to confess every wrong thought I've had in a day or in a week or a month or every, here, let's say I have a coworker and I had a negative thought about that coworker. I think he's just trying to show off. And a fleeting thought, and I said, Lord, that was ridiculous. I'm sorry for even thinking that. I don't have to go and tell that person, by the way, I was just thinking this about you. You know, one pastor said right before he was about to preach, a guy came up to him and said, Pastor, I just want you to know I've always felt you were a jerk. Please forgive me. Or another guy goes up to a young lady and says, I just have to confess, I lust after you all the time. No, there are things you keep between you and God, and you keep your mouth shut. But if there's actually been the breach where the sin has been committed in a tangible, outward way, and there's been a breach, then that needs to be dealt with. And the thing that's amazing is if there's true repentance, you don't blame anybody else. True repentance, Psalm 51, I alone have sinned. And I assure you, if you have a godly pastor and you come and tell the pastor that this particular thing has happened and it's a breach on that level, the pastor would say, all right, we need to share that. I'm willing to help you do it, but this does need to come out, and we'll walk you through it as a couple so that you come out stronger on the other side. All right, friends, we'll be right back. Let's look in the book of Acts when we come back and see what happened to the apostles who preached the gospel. Stay with us. Shake the nation, change the world. Change the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us today on The Line of Fire. I have a question for you. It's a question that can make you a little bit uneasy, but if you're listening to this broadcast, it's not because you want me to tickle your ears. So I have a question for you. Why should it be different for us than it was for Jesus and the apostles and the early church and believers throughout history and believers around the world today? Why were they persecuted for righteousness and we often are not, or are persecuted in very minor ways? Didn't Jesus say, Matthew 10, John 15, that the servant is not above his master? Didn't he say that? That if they persecuted me, they'll persecute you. If they hated me, they'll hate you. Isn't it true that to the degree we are like Jesus, yes, we'll be a friend of sinners. Yes, we'll be loved by many and bring healing and hope and deliverance and redemption to a dying and hurting world. And we will be hated and despised by others. Isn't that the reality? So what happens to the disciples after the Gospels? We know that Jesus dies and rises. We know that he says to his disciples repeatedly, if anyone wants to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever saves his life will lose it. Whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. We know that. This is repeatedly taught in the Gospels. This is reality. Following Jesus is costly. It's wonderful. It's glorious. Salvation is a free gift. We don't earn it. Being with him in this world and forever and ever and ever is beyond our wildest dreams. It is entirely undeserved. It is a gift of God's grace through his love expressed on the cross. And yet, this gift comes with consequences. This gift comes with responsibilities. And as we follow Jesus, we will find ourselves in conflict with a sinning world. As we follow Jesus, we'll find ourselves in conflict with other religions because he said he is the way, the truth, and the life. As we follow Jesus, we will find ourselves treated the way he was treated. So let's take, for example, in the book of Acts, the apostles begin preaching. Thousands of Jewish people come to faith. In the second chapter of the book of Acts, there's a pronounced miracle. In the third chapter of the book of Acts, a man born lame is miraculously healed. It's shaking the city. By the fourth chapter, there's now persecution and opposition. The apostles are in prison, or they're threatened. They're then set free by God's angelic power. And now they are warned once again not to preach anymore in Jesus' name, and they are flogged. This is a warning. They're flogged, and there's a warning. And look at what's written in Acts chapter 5, verse 41. Acts 5:41 tells us this, that the apostles left the Sanhedrin rejoicing that they had been counted worthy of suffering disgrace for the name. Every day in the temple courts and from house to house, they did not stop teaching and proclaiming the good news that Jesus is the Messiah. So the apostles, Jewish apostles, leave the Jewish Sanhedrin, rejoice. They've just been flogged. I've never been flogged. I've been threatened, spat at, never been flogged for the gospel. They were flogged. And rather than leaving the Sanhedrin with their heads hung down and feeling shamed and depressed, they left rejoicing that they were counted worthy of suffering reproach, of being shamed for the name of Jesus. In other words, we're being treated the way he was treated. And they rejoice because that, there's more. There's more. It says, day after day, temple courts, house from house, they never stopped teaching and proclaiming that Jesus is the Messiah. They were told, don't speak any more in his name. What do? They go out and speak. They go out and speak. Well, what's going to happen to them next? They've just been flogged. Maybe they'll be put in prison. Maybe they'll be flogged again. Maybe they'll be killed. So be it. They already lost their lives when they came to Jesus. They lost their lives and thereby found their lives. Now we see this pattern going on In Acts, the sixth chapter, is God is using men like Stephen and Philip, the men who are waiting on tables to alleviate some of the burden from the apostles. Persecution breaks out against them. Stephen is martyred. In Acts, the seventh chapter, Acts, the eighth chapter, persecution scatters the believers. Acts, the ninth chapter, Saul of Tarsus meets Jesus, meets Yeshua, meets the Messiah. He is transformed. He gets persecuted. And this is now the ongoing pattern. Acts 14, Paul is preaching. And when a man's miraculously healed, they want to offer sacrifices to him and his companion as if they're gods. They get him to not do that. And then other rabble-rousers come in, stir up opposition against Paul. Next thing, he's stoned, looks like he dies, is dragged out of the city, and God raises him up. This is the ongoing pattern. Now Acts chapter 16, they're in Philippi. They have been uniquely sent by God to Philippi. They have been sent by the Spirit directly to Philippi. Don't go here. Don't go here. Go there. Read the beginning of Acts 16. You'll see it. And then they lead some Jewish people to the Lord there. And then there are two men. They have a slave girl who has a spirit of divination. She predicts the future. She tells secrets to people. You know, she has a spirit of divination. They make a lot of money off of her fortune telling. So what happens? Paul drives the spirit out of her. They lose their income. So what do they say? Acts chapter 16, they bring them to the magistrate and they make this accusation. They say, these men, Acts 16, these men, what does it say? These men are Jews and are throwing our city into an uproar by advocating customs unlawful for us Romans to accept or practice. The crowd join in the attack against Paul and Silas, and the magistrates ordered them to be stripped and beaten with rods. They were severely flogged. But notice the accusation. These men are Jews, true, and are throwing our city into an uproar. Well, false. They were throwing the demonic world into an uproar. They were throwing the spiritual world into an uproar by preaching Jesus and driving out demons. But they themselves were peacemakers, not troublemakers. All right, so it's a distorted charge. They are advocating customs unlawful for us Romans to accept or practice. That was actually a true charge. And in other words, the Jewish faith was accepted by Roman law at that time, but you could not introduce the worship of other gods or speak against the gods. And what they were advocating was allegiance to Jesus and not to Caesar as Lord. So in a sense, it was going against Roman custom and Roman law at that time. Bottom line, they are falsely accused of throwing the city into an uproar, whereas they were simply preaching the gospel, and yet it went against the grain. Why do we think it's just going to be so peaceful here for us in America? Now, look, I'm trying to be a peacemaker, not a troublemaker. Every opportunity I have, I meet with people behind the scenes. I talk privately. I do my best to extend an olive branch in the midst of differences. On a number of occasions, especially early on as I was getting involved in LGBT issues, I made appointments with local activists to sit and have meals with them, to talk face to face, to get to know them better as fellow human beings, to say in the midst of our differences, how can we be neighbors? I'm always going to try to be a peacemaker. But the bottom line is, Jesus was hated. The apostles were hated. Believers are hated around the world. Jesus said it. I'll repeat from John 15. Don't be surprised if the world hates you. 1 Peter 4, Peter says, don't be surprised at the fiery trial you're suffering. This comes because we are identified with Jesus, because we are shining lights in a dark place. You say, well, America is different than Rome. Oh, is America a holy country? America is a righteous country? America is a godly country now? Is that what you're telling me? How many babies have we aborted? 55 million plus? We've redefined on a national level the definition of marriage. Rome never did that. I go down with all kinds of lists of the sins of our country. We are the world's leader in exporting pornography around the world. Whatever Rome did, it didn't even have the ability to do something like that back then. And then the injustice we've had in our history and the many evils to this day, I thank God for the good in America. I rejoice over so many good things in America and so many graces in our history at the same time. America is the world. America is marked by ungodliness. just watch our TV shows. How many can you watch from beginning to end without getting grieved here or having to turn your head away there or turn the sound down somewhere else? I mean, we are so narcissistic. We are very carnal in many, many ways. And on it goes. And we're like the rest of the world. We're sinning people. Why should it be different here than somewhere else? Why is it believers are dying for their faith in India and dying for their faith in Muslim countries, and we expect everything to be great here in America? We're deluding ourselves. And are you ready for this? I'm not looking for persecution. I'm not trying to stir up persecution. I'm not trying to get myself killed. But are you ready for this? A major reason we don't suffer more persecution is because we're so compromised. That's the truth. A major reason we do not suffer more persecution is because we're so compromised. Have you ever been involved in pro-life ministry? I'm not talking about screaming and yelling at people going to have an abortion. That's not what pro-life ministry does. I'm not talking about harassing abortion doctors and workers. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about standing in front of an abortion clinic and talking to people about the love of God and telling a mom you can help her. She doesn't have to have an abortion. You know folks that can help her and help her have the baby. And maybe you just have pictures up showing what abortion does. Here are the remains of aborted babies. In other words, you're preaching the love of God and trying to rescue that child from that fate. You watch the opposition you get. You watch the hatred that comes your way. You watch the ugliness of it. Why? Because you're shining light in a dark place. And you're making people feel uncomfortable about something very, very personal and very, very sensitive. And they may have a lot of guilt built up already. And now you come and speak the truth. Boy, you can expect opposition no matter how loving and kind and gracious you are. What happens in Acts 17? Paul, the apostles, get there. And some troublemaking Jews, there were Jews who were listening to Paul's message. There were others who started trouble. So troublemaking Jews in Thessalonica try to stir up opposition for him. And what happens? They're trying to find the apostles. What do they say in Acts 17, verse 6? It's a very famous section. They raided Jason's house in search of Paul and Silas, hoping to bring them out to the people. Verse 6, but when they could not find them, they dragged Jason and some other brothers before the city officials, shouting, "These men who have turned the world upside down have now come here." That's what you're going to be accused of. These men, these followers of Jesus, you're trying to turn the whole world upside down. No, we're trying to turn it right side up.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, just want to mention two very, very important programs that may be of tremendous relevance in your own life. If you are burning with a calling to minister, maybe you've had some ministry experience already, you've gone to college, maybe you started a family, maybe you've pastored or done evangelistic work, and you know you need to take that next step and take that full-time plunge. Perhaps God is calling you to Fire School of Ministry. This is not just a Bible school. We are not competing with seminaries. Our goal is more like raising up Navy SEALs and sending them out for specialized work. We have an intensive 9-month program we're introducing, Fire Leadership Institute, beginning this August. An intensive 9-month program that will be unique, I believe, around America. What we pour into you, how you will get grounded and changed. You can find out about it by going to fire-school.org, fire-school.org. And then after that intensive 9 months with us, you will go straight into a 9-month internship. So the next year, you will go straight into an internship. It could be doing evangelistic work in Africa. It could be doing missions work in the Philippines. It could be sitting under a local pastor. Depending on the specific calling, you will go into a direct hands-on mentoring where you'll be active, where you'll be doing things and learning in a hands-on way and supplementing that with online classes. We have intensified and shortened our program to enable you to get out on the field more quickly. Find out about that at fire-school.org. Yes, you need to be at least a high school graduate, but if you're 30 or 40 or 50, you are exactly who we're looking for also, as long as there is a calling to ministry and you are a solid, grounded believer. You say, yeah, I'd like to do that, but I can't. You know, I'm in ministry already, or I'm training to be a leader. I wish there was a way I could connect with you, Dr. Brown. Well, there is now. I'm beginning for the first time monthly webinars starting May 10th. All right. I will be sharing high level leadership material. This is for leaders and leaders in training. Okay. And in fact, you won't be able to get everything out of it if you're not a leader or not in training. So we are launching our leadership forum. You can find out about it by going to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. You'll just see it, one of the banners on the homepage. You sign up, and it is 90 minutes here and there. We may even go a little bit longer. The very first week, I'm going to be talking about how God knows how to promote you and your message. I'm going to be sharing some personal illustrations, opening up the scriptures. I believe you'll be greatly equipped and helped. Pastors, leaders in training, this is for you. It's my way to do online mentoring. So sign up, get word out to your friends. And then, because we're not going to have thousands of people doing this, okay, we're not going to have hundreds and hundreds doing this, it's going to be a smaller group, I'll be able to interact with questions as well. And if enough questions come up on a certain subject, I'll say, hey, well, why don't we just devote next month to that? Because this seems to be a major need that many of you have. So allow me to pour into you. We are every day live radio, live TV, every day live streaming, every day answering your questions, every day putting out new videos, every day putting out new articles, day and night. Then in our school setting with our incredible faculty, we can take a specialized group of people deeper. With our online mentoring, we can take a certain focus group deeper. So let us minister to you and serve you. And the online webinar, I believe, is a great way to connect. So many leaders over the years have said, Dr. Brown, we'd love to be mentored by you. We'd love to sit with you. Trust me, I would love to do that. I love to sit with people and pour into them, leaders and students, and then answer questions and teach on a certain level. I love to do that, just as I love being on radio. But there's only so much time in the day, and we can't be with everybody. And we live in different parts of the country and the world. So join me starting May 10th. Again, all the info is on our website, askdrbrown.org. All right, David Lane has the American Renewal Project as a large mailing list. I think something like 100,000 leaders on his email list. And he sent out an email today that really got my attention. And there is a coin, a medal. And he explains what Charles Spurgeon said about this. There's a picture of the medal. And here's what Spurgeon said. A medal was struck by Diocletian, which still remains, bearing the inscription, "The name of Christians being extinguished." And in Spain, a monumental pillar was raised on which was written, "Diocletian, Jovian, Maximian, Hercules, Caesaris, Augusti, for having adopted Galerius in the East, for having everywhere abolished the superstition of Christ, for having extended the worship of the gods." Spurgeon says, as a modern writer has eloquently observed, we have here a monument raised by paganism over the grave of its vanquished foe, but in this the people imagined a vain thing. So far from being deceased, Christianity was on the eve of its final and permanent triumph, and the stone guarded the sepulcher empty as the urn that Electra washed with her tears. Neither in Spain nor elsewhere can be pointed out the burial of Christianity. It is not, for the living have no tomb. I share with Spurgeon a celebration of the triumph of the gospel. I remind you of what Jesus said in Matthew 16, that he was building his church, his congregation, his bringing together of Jew and Gentile as one in him, filled with the Spirit, and that the gates of hell would not prevail against it. And scholars debate the meaning of that. Does it mean as God's people march forward, because gates are defensive, not offensive, right? As God's people march forward with the gospel, that even the gates of hell can't stop it. That's one incredible image. That be it the Iron Curtain or the Bamboo Curtain or the Veil of Islam or whatever it is, that the gospel will ultimately triumph, and with that God's people will see victory. Or are the gates spoken of as symbolic of power, because prevail is an offensive term, that whatever hell and the powers of darkness and death try to bring against us, they will not overcome. Now, it's very true that in certain parts of the world, the flame of the gospel was all but put out by severe persecution. In the so-called golden age of Islam and much of northern Africa and the Middle East, the persecution against the church was so severe that burning flame got cut down, but it continued to burn. And now it burns brighter and brighter and brighter in the Muslim world. Yes, there's horrific persecution of Christians in the Middle East. Yes, there's a genocide of Christians in the Middle East. Yes, numbers have dropped dramatically. There are refugees who've fled. At the same time, the gospel is spreading in the Muslim world like never before. And in the last 10, 20, 30 years, there's probably been a greater infusion of Muslims into the body of Christ. More and more Muslims coming to faith than in many decades or centuries before that. So friends, I'm not discouraged. The name of Jesus is continuing to be exalted around the world. I'm not discouraged in terms of, oh no, it's over. I'm burdened. I'm grieved. I see the complacency of the American church. I see the carnality of the American church. I see the compromised state of the American church. I see our me first mentality. I see our desire to bypass the cross. I see how much we have departed in many ways from a biblical gospel. I say we because I'm part of this church. And if you live in America, so are you. Even if you're a dissenting part, we're part of it. This is our family. These are our brothers and sisters. And what are the lacks and the blind spots in our own lives? Only God can tell us that. So we must humble ourselves with a state and sense of urgency. We must humble ourselves and cry out to God and recognize there is a price to be paid for obedience. Parents, get involved in your schools and do what's right. Businessmen, don't compromise your ethics. Kids in school, don't bow down to peer pressure. You say, what's the antidote? The antidote is to really know the Lord. The antidote is to really experience God. The antidote is to get so close to Him and have His word so real in your life that based on that, you won't fear man. Hey, let me read a quote to you from Arthur Pink, also from David Lane's email. He said, it is this very loneliness of the saint that serves to make manifest the genuineness of his faith. There is nothing remarkable in one believing what all his associates believe, but to have faith when surrounded by skeptics is something noteworthy. To stand alone, to be the solitary champion of a righteous cause when all others are federated into evil is a rare sight. Yet such was Rahab. There were none in Jericho with whom she could have fellowship, none there to encourage her heart and strengthen her hands by their godly counsel and example. All the more opportunity for her to prove the sufficiency of divine grace. Scan slowly the list presented in Hebrews 11 and then recall the recorded circumstances of each. With whom did Abel, Enoch, Noah have spiritual communion? From what brethren did Joseph, Moses, Gideon receive any help along the way? Who are the ones who encouraged and emboldened Elijah, Daniel, Nehemiah? Then think it not strange that you are called to walk almost, if not entirely alone, that you meet with scarcely any like-minded or any who are capable of giving you a lift along the road. Thankfully, most of us have friends, family members, congregational members that stand together with us. Many others, you feel alone, and some are alone. I remember getting a note from a 15-year-old young lady on Twitter, and she said, you're like the grandfather I never had, and you helped me keep my spiritual sanity in the midst of my school. I mean, I was deeply touched by those words. And maybe I just read that quote from Pink for you, a college student feeling all alone. For you, a single mom feeling all alone. For you, a 13-year-old in middle school feeling all alone. For you, a pastor in denomination feeling all alone. Stand strong. God Himself is with you.